In the Arab city of Cordoba were 2 miles of public lighting in the streets when London was a village.
Yes, you were great.
9 centuries ago.
Time to be great again, my lord.
I long for the vanished gardens of Cordoba.
A new book reminds us of something that Lawrence of Arabia knew.
Although I love that scene. That's a Brit imitating an Arab and another Brit playing a Brit trying to be an Arab.
That's actually totally true.
We are so beyond that now. Yeah.
But at this point, we want to take people back in history pre-Lawrence Arabia to 1000 AD when Cordoba indeed had streets that were lit with electric lighting. While the Europeans were stumbling through the musty corridors of the Dark Ages, the Arab world was awake, alert, enlivened with scientific discovery. Arab astronomers laid the foundations for the model of the solar system before Copernicus. Arab doctors had figured out the circulatory system, while Europeans, you may remember, were still treating patients by bleeding them. Joining us now is British-Iraqi physicist Jim Al-Khalili, the author of a new book. It's called The House of Wisdom, How Arabic Science Saved Ancient Knowledge and Gave Us the Renaissance. And Jim joins us now from Scotland. Good morning.
Good morning.
Or afternoon, where you are. You know, you tell some amazing stories in here, stories that at this point we've forgotten. I'm wondering if you'd choose a couple of the people you talk about. Maybe you're a Middle Eastern scientist who invented the experimental approach.
Yeah. I mean, I think, first of all, in your introduction, you mentioned these were Arab scientists. Whenever I say that, Persians, Iranians get upset because a lot of these scientists were actually Persian rather than Arab.
Ah.
So it's a different race.
Corrected.
But of course, it's a very common mistake. But of course, what unites them is the language, the Arabic language, because this was the Islamic Empire, and the Arabic language was the official language of the Quran, and so the language of the empire. So everyone had to write in Arabic, just as English is now the international language. Then it was Arabic. In terms of two characters, well, okay, my two favorites were both contemporaries. There was one who was born in southern Iraq in the city of Basra in the late 10th century, called Ibn al-Haytham, and a really colorful character. I mean, he had a boring job working for sort of an administrative job, which he didn't like, but rather than leave the job and go off and pursue his scholarly pursuits, he decided to feign madness, and he got the sack for that. He then went on to do work in astronomy and mathematics, and he then realized that he could maybe help the new dynasty in Egypt control the water of the Nile, and he proposed the building of a dam across the Nile, somewhere where modern-day Aswan is, in fact.
Wow.
And they called him over there, realized he'd bitten off more than he could chew, didn't want to upset the caliph in Cairo, so what does he do? He feigns madness again.
Well, he was good at it by then.
Absolutely. But, of course, his imprisonment following that meant he had over 10 years of solitude in which he wrote one of the great books in science, a book on optics. Every bit as influential as Isaac Newton's book on optics 700 years later.
Oh, that's amazing.
And in that book, essentially, he lays down what we would regard as the scientific method, how you do science today. And you come up with a theory or hypothesis, and then you carry out an experiment to test it. And if it's wrong, you discard it. That essentially the experimental method and mathematizing science was something we can trace back to this guy, Ibn al-Haytham.
And, you know, the Arab and Persian scientists who you write about, you know, were coming from a tradition of the classics, which in many ways were inherited by the Islamic Empire. And a modern European understanding of the classics really comes through the filter of the Arab and
Absolutely.
Islamic world.
Yes, I mean, I think it's really a lesson in how science develops. No civilization creates science or understanding and knowledge about how the world works by itself. It's always building on what's come before. As Newton said, we stand on the shoulders of giants. And, of course, the ancient Greeks had provided this wonderful legacy of great texts in philosophy and geometry and astronomy, which the Islamic Empire rediscovered, and they suddenly had this appetite for translating these Greek texts and indeed Indian texts into the Arabic language, which subsequently, of course, when Europe awoke in the Renaissance, they then retranslated back into Latin. So very often the works of people like Aristotle and Plato went from Greek to Arabic and then to Latin along that route.
We're speaking with Jim Al-Khalili. He's a professor of physics at the University of Surrey, author of the new book, The House of Wisdom, How Arabic Science Saved Ancient Knowledge and Gave Us the Renaissance. In this particular case, you're talking literally about the House of Wisdom. It was in Baghdad, one of the great universities, academies, not just then, but of all time. And, you know, I'm wondering, in your book, you also have theories about why the greater world has forgotten the advances, the scientific advances of the Arab world.
Yeah, I mean, there's no sort of conspiracy theory involved here. It, you know, very often people ask, you know, what happened, what went wrong, why did the Islamic Empire or its scientific achievements go into decline? I think, you know, empires rise and fall, and the Islamic world began to fragment at the time that Europe was rising in power and had discovered the new world. Some of the texts, a lot of work on medicine, Avicenna's great book, The Canon of Medicine, was translated into Latin, and people in Europe certainly knew about it and used it for many hundreds of years. A book on algebra, in fact, the word algebra comes from the title of this book, Al-Jabr, was well known by European mathematicians. But of course, once you get the likes of Copernicus and Galileo and Newton coming along, who were so great and science advanced so rapidly in that period in Europe, that suddenly these medieval scientists do have to take a back seat.
But do you think the intellectual...
they're an important part.
Do you think there's a stirring of the sort of intellectual stew in the Middle East right now, politically, with everything that's going on?
Absolutely. There does seem to be. And even before all the current unrest, and, you know, no one knows which direction it's going to go in. There's so much uncertainty there. But certainly many of the wealthy Gulf oil states, Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Qatar, are pouring billions of oil dollars into creating shiny, brand new universities and research institutions. That's not to say, you know, you're going to get the next Nobel Prize winner in physics coming out of Saudi Arabia anytime soon. You need more than just money. You need, you know, a real spirit of intellectual freedom and so on. Providing money is the first step. We see that throughout history. That's why the Islamic Empire created this great golden age, because there was money. That's how the Renaissance began in Europe, because the Medici family in Florence provided money to the likes of Michelangelo.
Absolutely. Jim Al-Khalili, professor of physics at the University of Surrey, author of the new book, The House of Wisdom, How Arabic Science Saved Ancient Knowledge and Gave Us the Renaissance. Thank you so much.